Ricarda. Ricarda Steinbrecher. I'm originally from Germany. Now I live in the UK. Thank you.
And the group is Econexus.
The group is Econexus, yeah. So, basically, if we look at all the problems which Anne just mentioned, it's quite clear, like, if the gene escapes, then there is no way to hold it back, because the genetic makeup of the trees in the forest is the same as the genetic makeup of the trees being used for genetic engineering. It's not like a domesticated form, as you mentioned. So there is no natural boundary in terms of genetic compatibility. And also, there is no natural boundary, like for the seeds, for the pollen, I don't write it down there, it's not much space, never mind. So basically, when we are looking at genetic engineering and the escape mechanism, we have pollen, we have seed, we have also something which is like it's called sprouts, you know, like something which comes out of the root system, which builds own trees. But the other thing is also sometimes cuttings, you know, like willow, you can put it in the ground, it will grow again. Grafting wouldn't work if that capacity for rejoining with another tree wasn't there. So all these areas we need to take into consideration when we are talking about gene escape. Now, it's quite clear from what Anne said, we just will end up in a real disaster if there is the gene escape into the forest. So what can be done? Okay, I work a lot on the biosafety protocol negotiations. That's the Cartagena Biosafety Protocol, which is under the umbrella of the Convention of Biological Diversity. And that treaty has been negotiated since 1995. There was a final product in 2000, but negotiations still are going on. But in that, containment, because that's what we're talking about, gene containment, is defined as a physical entity. Because it was very clear when we were putting down the definition that a natural system, because it's alive, it can't be relied upon really as a containment system. I'll explain in a moment more why, but basically there are only physical structures are accepted in the biosafety protocol, which of course here would be completely out of questions. I mean, how many trees can you get into which kind of bigger building? You know, it doesn't work that way. Now, okay, so we are looking at a mechanism which is a biological mechanism. So proponents who say they've got the answer will say there is something like biological containment systems, which is either, as Anne mentioned, male sterility. That means you produce plants which will have flowers, yes, but only to receive pollen, but not to produce pollen. Therefore, you would cut out the pollen flow. Of course, you would still have the seed. And seed of trees, I mean, like birds pick them up, they hang on to fur. I mean, like when we were in Montreal recently, there were these trees outside, and all of a sudden, like, all these seeds were just flying about like snow and ending up in our clothes. We were international delegations. Like, we travel home. I mean, are we going to search all our clothes where it's landed? You know, so it's quite easy. Even we carry the seeds around. Now, therefore, male sterility is not good enough. Okay, is there anything like seed sterility? There's only one version currently in discussion for that, which is Terminator technology, which you might all have heard about. In case not, I'll briefly summarize. The aim of that technology is to it's used much more in the area of crops, because it's originally intended as a technology protection system, because a lot of farmers will save seeds despite the fact that there might be a patent protection on it, but you can still save them and use them. look what happened in Argentina. Just passing seeds on now of GM soya, and it's spread all over also into Brazil and to other areas. Or some countries in Africa will not have the patent laws or not the enforcement. So that is just not good enough. So the USDA and Belt and Pineland developed that method that basically this is a biologically enforced patent regime. So in that case, the company will produce a seed, treat it with chemicals. Well, it first has to put like quite a number of genes in order to make that system. But the end result will, they have a seed, they can treat it with a chemical, sell it to a farmer. The plant will still grow, it will still produce seeds, but when you save these seeds, they will actually, when you put them back in the ground, produce a toxin that kills planting the seeds. So that is, therefore, the other name for it is also called suicide seeds, because that's what the seeds actually do. They commit suicide. Now, would that work for trees? Could that be the answer? Because that is being pushed for. Could that be the answer for stopping contamination? Okay, I will not go into all the molecular details here. But the situation is that having looked at it myself with my genetics scientist hat, I took apart all the components because it does not exist in practice yet. So there's the pattern there, supposedly growing it in greenhouse trials, but there is no data yet, as usual, you know, sort of the data we can get for something is usually really minute. But from that I know it doesn't exist yet as a whole, but the components, I looked at the components because it is something, a system which needs to be inducible from the outside so that, of course, you can still produce seeds when you need them as the person who wants to sell the seeds. So the mechanism needs to have a switch. It needs to be inducible with chemicals. So you need like different complex blocks of genetic engineering. And I looked at all the individual ones, and all of them are unreliable. They have real pitfalls in them. For me, that means, okay, if the components don't work 100%, how can the whole work 100%? Because that's what we need. We need 100% reliability, 100% effectiveness? What's the word?
Yes, effectiveness.
Something like that. And because otherwise, you just need like one seed to escape or some of the pollen to escape, and you've got the contamination. So that system, therefore, also doesn't work. Why is trees an extra problem here? Well, what we have learned in genetic engineering is that plants are quite capable of switching introduced genes, which we call transgenes, because they have to be transferred into a plant. They are quite capable of switching that one off. It's a phenomenon which we call gene silencing. And if you look, I mean, we only discovered that around 1990. We thought we knew everything about plant gene regulation, how it works, close the books, you know. And genetic engineering came along, growing petunia, which were originally white, giving them a gene for red from another species. In the greenhouse, it worked fine. All were red. They grew up more seeds, and eventually they had enough for planting a whole field, which is, of course, then open air outside. And at first they were all red, and then the same plants, all of a sudden, like they had new flowers, they came out white, or white and red, it mixed. And people were like, scientists were like, what is happening here? What? That's not supposed to happen. Well, it wasn't supposed to happen, that's right. But the plant has a mechanism which it developed over, which we now know over the whole evolutionary process to defend itself against an invasion, like of viruses, for example, like of foreign DNA. If something comes in, they feel like, ooh, that doesn't feel quite right. They can actually mark the DNA from outside and say, don't read, don't use. So it's silenced. Now, that will, particular, that has been like observed very how to say that, transgenes, like the gene you put in, are particularly affected by that mechanism because it is something which has just been thrown into it. But there is another thing, which is stress. Stress is a trigger. Like, for example, with these petunia outside in the field, they had been, like, all safe in their greenhouse, you know, sort of going on. And all of a sudden, they are, like, in this summer heat, you know, and then there's this rain or whatever, which is, of course, perceived as a stress, which usually plants can cope well with, you know, and especially if you look at trees now. I mean, you mentioned what trees go through as stress, you know. Like, we are not having, like, one generation of, like, 1 year. We have, like, 60, 70, 80, 100, 200. I mean, like, some trees are known to be over 1,000 years old. So they go through a lot of stress in their lifetimes, including, like, insect attack is a stress, or storm and cold is a fire rushing through is a stress. Now, if then they switch that trait off, the seed's sterility trait, if gene silencing then occurs, they're already grown. Who's going to observe it all the time that all of a sudden it starts flowering or producing producing fertile seeds? So trees are really a very particular case because they live so long. The tests which would need to be done in order to see, like, if something is safe is like generations. You need to actually produce generations of that, observe it, and then see, like, how are you going to do that with trees unless you have a commitment of, let's say, like, a family of scientists, say, like, okay, for the next five generations, we commit ourselves to this, you know? So what the grandfather started will eventually, as we know, it doesn't work that way. So in that sense, male sterility doesn't work. The Terminator technology doesn't work. Is there another option we have? A biological option? Well, there is another one which would try to actually, as Anne said, to completely prevent any kind of flowering whatsoever. Have the dead, silent forest. That's an option. Biologically. Otherwise, it might not be perceived as one. The problem is the same as I just said. It's unreliable because we cannot say that will not be switched off over the years the tree is growing and the stress coming in. We have gene silencing, and then we have the gene escape. I think that is all I need to say to that. Otherwise, you know, you go off in DNA land, so... Let's come back to the campaign.
Okay, thank you, Ricarda.
I'm going to pass around a sign-up sheet while Oren's speaking.
Is there a clarification, a question for clarification? Sorry, I should have asked that.
Where can we get information on the DNA science of it all? Like, where are those papers or those theories about silencing and how it
works? Just need to go through the scientific literature, but if that is an area in particular interested, just... You know, talk to me later.
And I'll try to be fairly brief so we can get some discussion going and you all don't have to just look at the talking heads up here.
Okay, that was telling me off.
Ricarda, what time is it right now? For you, is it pretty late, isn't it? Or you're just flying and it doesn't, it's all the same?
I saw an hour last night on the bus.
My name is Oren Langell. I'm the co-director, along with Anne, of Global Justice Ecology Project, and one of our programs that we have is on genetically engineered trees, and to try to stop genetically engineered trees. And a project that came out of that is the Stop GE Trees campaign, which I'm the coordinator of. And the Stop GE Trees campaign is a U.S. Canadian alliance that has our group in it, Rainforest Action Network, Sierra Club, Polaris Institute, Institute for Social Ecology Biotechnology Project, Forest Ethics, GE Free Maine, Northwest Resistance Against Genetic Engineering, the Klamath Siskiyou Wildland Center, Southern Wildlaw, Dogwood Alliance, and I think there's probably going to be more as this continues, is because GE trees are becoming a very hot issue right now because the commercial development of it happening in China, and we feel that within a couple of years, Brazil, Chile, it's going to get really big in those places. I guess I mentioned before, one of the reasons I'm sitting here is because of the Zapatistas, and to make a long story short, I led a delegation down to Chiapas, and while we were there, and one of the reasons we were down there is because of the indigenous uprising in Chiapas. This was I was going back many times, and this was in 1999, and there was a guy by the name of Alfonso Romo in Chiapas, and he is called the biotechnology king, and we found out that he owns a lot of forests and has forest concerns, so some of us started snooping around. We ended up going to Tabasco and other places, but found Tepl Inland Container was doing some work down there where the overseer said that they were working on genetically engineered trees. I came back to the United States. Brian Tokar is a good friend of ours, and so Brian said, okay, well, you got to find out about this. And I said, oh, Brian, I'm really, you know, I don't want to really get into GE. So he said, well, if you don't do it, who is going to do it? So I Googled to see if anything was out there and found out, like, one guy in the UK kind of knew about it. I wrote him, emailed him, and he said, congratulations, you're one of the five people in the world now, besides the scientists, that know about this. And so... Yeah, and Brian then forced me to write a chapter in his book, and it just kept getting, you know, we just kept falling into GE trees where you just couldn't get out of doing it. And so, anyway, I'll get into the U.S.-Canada campaign a little bit of what's going on. This actually has been in the process of being going on for a couple of years right now, and it is a couple of things that are happening that I think are probably exciting are some regional campaigns that are going on. In the Northwest, which Ann mentioned, a lot of university testing and university research and test plots up there. This fall, there's going to be a road show that's going to go out throughout the Northwest, talking about what's going on in GE trees, showing what's going on, going to the universities, trying to educate the students about what their university is doing, and you know how they're complicit. The universities are complicit in all of this. And then in the southeastern United States, there's a big focus on field trials and what's going on down in the southeast because, as Ann was mentioning before, that the genetic drift can be so heavy that, you know, it can come to Pennsylvania and wipe out the, contaminate the Pennsylvania forests and contaminate the apple growers here in Pennsylvania. They're also doing the southeast, doing a lot of landowner education. People that have forest plots and people that are working in the timber industry, letting them know what's going on. We've also been involved for years now with some of the groups that I've mentioned in carpet campaigns, and there's been a couple of wins in the carpet campaigns where places like Kinko's and Office Depot have actually, in the carpet campaigns that people have won, it's stated in there that they will not use genetically engineered paper from genetically engineered trees or any products thereof. Right now, there's campaigns going on right now against Victoria's Secret, Weyerhaeuser, Staples, Georgia-Pacific, Westvaco, and I think that's probably it. But there are, you know, a lot of our allies from Rainforest Action Network, Forest Ethics, Dogwood Alliance, they're all pursuing some of these campaigns, which is really, really great. And also there's a National Forest Protection Alliance, which in their wording to trying to get passed into law right now is that there will be no GE trees in national forests. And I mean, I think that's a good step in the right direction, that we can't have that GE trees at all in national forests. But again, you know, the worry about the contamination is really, really pretty awesome. The things are going on with the Institute for Social Ecology Biotechnology Project and GE Free Maine. They're working on local legislation, and people in the southeast are also doing that also. There's a lot of work going on right now in different places throughout the U.S., and right now a big campaign in Canada was just launched about GE Free Zones. And in all places where there's mention of GE Free Zones, we're trying to make sure that there's wording in there about genetically engineered trees, which is exactly what the Council of Canadians has launched a big campaign, and it's definitely in there for that. One of the things that our campaign is doing, we have a media committee, and within the last month, we've put out four different press releases, And the first one was the United Nations Forum on Forests in New York City, and that was with Stop GE Trees Campaign, Global Justice Ecology Project, the Global Forest Coalition, Friends of the Earth International, and World Rainforest Movement. And that was basically talking about plantations and plantations in the Global South and how we didn't want to see the introduction. We wanted to see the end of plantations, but also we didn't want to see any genetically engineered trees put into the plantations. Then just the beginning of this month in Vancouver, there was a Global Forest and Paper Summit, and we released a press release there with Forest Ethics, Rainforest Action Network, again, Global Justice Ecology Project, and Stop GE Trees Campaign, and we talked about some of the things about where industry was going to and what was happening, kind of spotlighting some of the things in Chile, especially with the Mapuche, who indigenous people that I'll talk about a little bit later, too. And then the third press release that came out was at the UN meeting of the Cartagena Protocol on Biosafety, and that was attended by Anne and Ricarda, and they all put out a press release from, again, the same folks, including EcoNexus and the People's Forest Forum from Finland. And what did you all say? You were calling for a moratorium internationally on GE trees. And then the next release, the fourth release, is going to be issued on Tuesday from here, and we're going to be talking, this is going to be released by Global Justice Ecology Project, the Stop GE Trees Campaign, Sierra Club, and Southern Forest Network, and we're calling for a ban demanding on the release of genetically engineered trees into the environment, threats to forest, landowners, and apple growers cited. So that's some of the media work we're doing. We're really gearing up our media campaign, and one of the reasons we're gearing up our media campaign and trying to get this out is we're just releasing a movie tomorrow night. You're going to be, hopefully, all come and see the East Coast premiere of A Silent Forest, The Growing Threat, Genetically Engineered Trees. It's a 45-minute documentary narrated by Dr. David Suzuki, which Lucy in the background, when we were trying to figure out who are we going to get to narrate this video, and Lucy said, get a hold of Suzuki, maybe he'll do it. And I got a hold of Dr. Suzuki, and he said, sure. And so now we have Suzuki, we have people like Percy Smizer in the video, Anne's in it, Ignacio Chapella, Brian Tokar, who I've mentioned, other folks, including...
It's a real good one.
Yeah, please come and see it. The world premiere was in Vancouver during the Global Forest
Paper Summit,
but this is the East Coast premiere, and I think it would be really great if you all could make it tomorrow night at 9. Where is it?
At the other building.
Ethical Society building at 9 o'clock. And so I guess I wanted to really quickly just talk about the international campaign, which is a bit separate from the Stop GE Trees campaign, but we got involved internationally almost immediately after I got back from Chiapas, and we were in 2000 in New Zealand and in Tasmania at a Native Forest Network International Conference, and we were networking with groups like Greenpeace and other people about GE trees. And at that time, it didn't seem like that big of a threat to a lot of people because people were going, well, you know, it's 10 years into development. You know, once this commercial, you know, then we might think about it a little bit more. And so our attitude is, no, let's stop it before it is commercial. Let's not get the genie out of the bottle and then try to put it back in. Let's cap the bottle right away. Well, even a few months ago, to be honest with you, we actually thought that there were no commercial applications yet or introductions, and then we found out about China, who just like snuck it in, and that all kind of really shocked us. And then we're seeing the speeding up of things in Brazil and Chile, especially, which Anne mentioned. And then in Milan in 2003, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, it was then said that the genetically engineered trees could be allowed into forest plantations to mitigate global warming. And I think when that happened, a lot of us just said, well, you know, we have to do something to really counter that and counter that thought, because this is something that the industry is really going to push to everybody. Oh, global warming, we're all going to die, so let's plant genetically engineered trees and save everybody. Well, we know that that's a falsehood and it's not going to work. And Anne went to Switzerland in May, I think, of last year to the UN Forum on Forests and did presentations to some of the folks from the UN, working with the with people from Finland on that. And then Anne was invited, because of this work on climate change, to go to Durban, South Africa toward the end of last year in November, where there were different people's organizations and grassroots movements and some NGOs got together in Durban, South Africa, and signed and came up with something called the Durban Declaration. And the Durban Declaration it gets a lot of heat from some people because it pretty much intimates that the Kyoto Protocol is a little bit too late and it's not enough. And what we need is a worldwide grassroots movement, a global movement to stop climate change. And it's gonna, you know, people are starting to lose faith with governments, with UN bodies, and it's going to have to be the people themselves that do that. And it's very interesting, I think, that that opens some doors of really getting in some of the social aspects and environmental justice aspects into some of this stuff that we're talking about. And then Anne and I both went down to Buenos Aires last December for the UN, again, the UNFCCC, and did a press conference. We talked to people. We did all kind of things trying to see if we thought the UN would reverse that decision of GE trees, and we kind of figured out that they probably are not going to reverse it. We then went to Chile and met with Mapuche indigenous people who say they don't live in Chile, they live in Mapuche territory, and we totally agree with them that they the Mapuche are very interesting folks. They were some of the last people to have most of their land stolen from them. They are still fighting in resistance to this. Their lands are being really hammered with plantations, eucalyptus and pine, and eucalyptus and pine, and we've seen a lot of health effects. And we're working with the Mapuche because they know that the next thing that they're going to see are going to be genetically engineered trees. And so they're already working in resistance against plantations, so it's very good to be working with them right now. And on this international scope, one of the groups we're really working very closely with is the World Rainforest Movement in Montevideo in Uruguay. And they're going to be holding sometime this year, either in South Africa or we think maybe Brazil, a international strategy session on plantations. And what we're going to do in conjunction with World Rainforest Movement is have an international strategy session on genetically engineered trees, because it just really stands to reason that the people that are going to be affected, the communities are going to be affected, or the communities already that are dealing with plantations, and now there's going to be this added pressure on that. So I'll kind of end it at that, but just really hope everybody could come and see this video tomorrow night. It's been like 2 years in the making, and Dr. Suzuki is just phenomenal. I've never seen him really mad before when I've watched him in a video. He's pissed off. And I'm really glad. I mean, it's really good to see somebody like Suzuki get pissed off about the whole thing. And outside of that, I think I'll just shut up and maybe we can start opening this up.
This might be covered in the movie, and it is part of another question, but what is the argument that these appropriate